This is The Fandemic, hosted by my dad, a podcast about catching up and nerding out
with anyone whose awesomeness levels rival mine.
So level up your awesomeness and welcome to The Fandemic. Get your earphones in, everybody, and everybody hear us out. We are Rob Uten and Brian Dennis, and this is PBOTN. We've got my dad leveling up your awesomeness, dropping knowledge of TV, movies, and comics. We've got Brian Dennis flexing his nerd muscles. How you level up your awesomeness? He will solve the puzzle. Just when you thought you've heard it all, a new episode will come along. Won't you like, subscribe, and rate our show? One last thing, leave a 5-star review before you go. Oh yeah!
Welcome to Prevenge of the Nerds. This is a podcast about the stories that could have led to your favorite movies, TV shows, and so much more. I'm Bradley Butin, and this is
Brian S. Dennis, with an S stands for put him in a body bag.
I can't wait to see. For a second there, I thought you were going to say pumped up kicks. And I was like, oh, buddy.
That's another thing we got to talk about away. When you mentioned that, and I know we're going to talk more about where that particular comes from, but for those of you in the audience, Pumped Up Kid was a very popular, Pumped Up Kid was a very popular pop song. But yeah, if you actually listen to the lyrics of it or after it came out, there was a couple articles that go, well, this is what the song, because it is such a catchy tune. We all just sing songs without paying any attention to like the lyrics. Well, another one is the Nelly's first big hit. I can't think of the name of it, but no, it was before then. It was I'm singing a song. I'm gonna have to get the lyric, the title. It'll come to me in a minute. But anyway, but yes, Pump the Kids is great. I'm gonna just Google it, so I don't want to misrepresent. So Nelly, if you're listening, we always invite you to the podcast. But yes, let's get right into it, man, because this is our first podcast for Prevent. I don't know what you got going on the Fandemic side of things, but for the Prevent of the Nerds, this is our first recording of 2022. So we hope our entire audience had a very happy and safe new year and is enjoying what, at least in the Midwest, a very cold and snow-filled part of the year.
Oh boy, yeah, I plowed out more driveways than I care to admit yesterday, but so we will be your guides on this quest to level up your awesomeness. We will nerd out, we will get sidetracked, and we're gonna have a heck of a time doing it. This is how the show is gonna go. First, we will cover our topic of the week. We will discuss, theorize, and give our 2 cents worth, along with a penny for our thoughts. Then we'll each have our own topic to cover with each other. These will be referred to as our tats. Think about this. But first, Brian.
Yes.
Did you know that Peter Parker's calendar only has 11 months in it?
Really? And why does Peter Parker's calendar only have 11 months in it?
He misses May.
Ow. So I'm assuming most people that are listening have, at least at one point in time, had a Facebook page. So, and I think it happens usually every January. They do the 10 years later thing where people take pictures of themselves and show themselves. Some people have an age. I have friends that literally don't know they've aged. They have some people that look a decade later look better than they did.
Yeah.
It's hard to say that when you talk about a decade ago, it was still 2012. Okay. Right. That's scary. Because my head went, oh, like in like 2000. No, 2012. But one of the funnier ones, when they do some celebrity ones, and there's one where it shows Britney Spears, and 10 years later is Iggy Pop. That's one of my personal favorites. But I think the one that wins the day is it shows Aunt May of the Aunt May in the Tobey Maguire.
Right.
Spider-Man, and then the Marissa Tomei Aunt May. And there's a little bit of a difference you will. Yes. And as Tony Stark said, you're unreasonably attractive aunt. So yes, absolutely. Yes. And I it does make me want to try Date Loaf. I'm not gonna lie. Does make me want to try Date Loaf. So
I'm with you there.
Yeah. Now, so there's proof for every one of us that identifies with Happy Hogan out there.
I'm all for Happy Hogan, especially with what he's doing, but with the Book of Boba Fett. Oh, we have to get into that as
so
well.
So much good stuff. So much good stuff.
I tell you what, let's nerd out a little bit before we get into the topic of the week, and then let's not introduce the topic of the week just yet. Sure. I do got to talk about Peacemaker, dude. Kaylee, my wife, I love you. She hates it.
Why?
It's too vulgar for her. She's like,
it's very
vulgar.
You
don't need nudity there.
And it's like, very vulgar.
Yeah, whatever. You know,
it is vulgar, but you know, it's vulgar in almost like a Deadpool kind of way.
Uh-huh.
Like it is very, you know, there is some nudity. We get a lot of John Cena's. But okay, first off, before we go in, if those of you aren't familiar with the show we're talking about, in The Suicide Squad, not Suicide Squad, mm-hmm. which is a Will Smith vehicle, but the sequel, we star Idris Elba, who is not playing the same character. People think he is not.
Right.
But in The Suicide Squad, which came out, I was going to say earlier this year, but back in mid part of 2021, we introduced to a host of new characters in The Suicide Squad movie, one of which is known as Peacemaker, who is played by, I got to say, an incredibly talented actor in one John Cena.
Mm-hmm.
I was actually talking to I forget who it was, but we're discussing that, you know, when you talk about professional wrestlers who can actually have talented actors, you know, there's Dwayne Johnson, aka The Rock, and everybody else, you know, who else is there? Well, right. We've added another name to this, and he's done things like he was in both Daddy's Home and Daddy's Home 2. Mm-hmm. He's done some commercials. I mean, he has a very expanded role when he plays Peacemaker, who, without giving any spoilers, has not only a very significant role in The Suicide Squad, but has now been, has a starring vehicle on HBO known, and it's called Peacemaker, a la the character. And he plays the son, we'll probably get into his, and again, spoiler alert, you've not watched Peacemaker, but this is meant to hopefully employ you to watch it, because I think we both just loved everything we've seen so far.
Yeah. I have to say, besides that intro and how obviously silly it is, and the fact that Peacemaker is the anti-Captain America.
Yes.
But
I would say a more realistic Captain America.
Right. Yeah,
he may be Captain Tea Party. He may be Captain Tea Party.
Yeah, exactly. And without getting too political or anything, but I was Robert Patrick.
Yes.
Wow. I mean, he's a good actor, and man, like,
and he's
brought in white freaking dragon. I'm like,
yes.
I was shocked. I was like, they okay. How is this gonna go?
And they didn't. Okay, and then Judo Master, and I know your wife hasn't lost some of the vulgarity, but I think so. We live in a world, and I mean this with all due respect. We live in a world where, okay, so comics have been going on since the 30s in large mass. So things that were okay in comics when we really had a lot of those characters, even going back to Batman, Captain America, Superman, a lot of the characters that have been long-range comic books, how they're presented, and more importantly, how the villains and other people that were in their stories were presented, were not, would be considered woke, or really even okay. Forget even being politically correct. Most of us go, that's a little far there.
Yeah.
So we've seen different characters and different versions of characters either be softened or really completely revamped in both the MCU and the DCU.
Yeah.
What we're seeing in Peacemaker, by the way, Peacemaker is led by James Gunn. If you are more Marvel fans, you can thank him for Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 1, Volume 2, and soon to be Volume 3. he really led this. He did the Suicide Squad. Yeah. And he's really helmed this one. And you see them with White Dragon, with Judo Master, with taking characters that we may go, really? And staying fairly true to their roots, but rooting them in a world that, honestly, in a lot of ways, those characters may be actually more real, be more likely to happen in our very polarized world than maybe would have happened, you know, 80 years ago at this point. Right. So I think it's actually done with a fairly smart way. And again, not to I disagree with your wife too much. So much of what, I'll give you a really quick example of this. And again, this show is on HBO for a reason.
Yeah.
There's, pardon me. John Cena and his character, Peacemaker, has been incarcerated for approximately four years, I believe. Mm-hmm. And so once he's released, and he's, well, I shouldn't say released, once he's out of prison, we'll say it that way.
Out of the hospital.
He has a desire to do something that, whether you're male or female, a lot of times the number one priority of most inmates once they are released. And so there's a significant part and a very significant scene of the show, which revolves around him seeking and succeeding at this endeavor. But it also is central to one of the primary plots that weaves through the entire first three. And if you don't know, right now we have three episodes that you can stream on HBO. Pardon me. So yeah, there were definitely some R-rated things that occurred, but also it's like, okay, and it's very funny. And I think that's the thing for all the vulgarity and the violence, it's very smart and it's extremely funny. And to say that there's an action show about a guy who says, you know, he'll kill as many men, women, and children as it takes to, you know, for a peaceful world. That's kind of his moniker. It's just, it really is uproariously funny. It really, really is.
And it's smart. It's smart. Yeah.
It is very smart.
The way that they did it, it's just like, wow. I'm like, they couldn't, I'm stumbling on my words. It could be easily misconstrued. But the way that everything happens, it's not. And it's like, wow, because I mean, you bring in a character whose big thing is being the leader of the KKK, you know, and you obviously hate him right away.
Right.
And then like have him with like that one laughing scene with him and John Cena about Idris Elba and a character being tortured by rats and then having Ratcatcher on the team.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, wow, like I hate this character, but like Robert Patrick.
And that was the only thing they bonded in. That was the end, by the way. And again, I'm assuming most people haven't seen it. Maybe you have.
Yeah.
You see, so John Cena Peacemaker is Robert Patrick, White Dragon's son. And so as you're saying that, Brad, one of the things that went through my head was they did a great job in Joker of showing the things that would have happened in this character's life that would create Joker, right?
Yes.
They do very similarly. They do it. They do it in a half, probably 40-minute show, and they bring in more comedy. But again, but they also bring in a lot of the seriousness of showing if your father is this cat, this is how you're going to grow up. So for all the work that Peacemaker does in trying to bond with his father, only time he's successful with that is to bring up this horrible story of Idris Elba's character being tortured. Not his boat isn't just fearful, but being scarred literally by being tortured and abused and being exposed to, you know, dozens of rats. And you see his father find it so delightfully funny, he literally cannot catch his breath.
Yeah, it has to have
that's
water.
The only way that they could actually bond. So that shows you when you grow up in that environment, and it really makes you honestly admire Peacemaker.
Yeah.
For all of the things he does that are somewhat violent, mm-hmm. criminal, and just beetle-headed, he's mm-hmm. actually trying to, he's trying to find a moral compass by being raised in an incredibly immoral environment.
Correct.
And that is incredibly smart to do it that way, and it's very relatable. That yeah. all of us, superpowered or not, Battle of Peterson doesn't actually have any superpowers, but, you know, whatever we do, from a person that swings a broom to a person that carries a weapon, most of us are really trying to do the best we can with what we got.
Yeah.
And they do that very, again, in the first three episodes, so incredibly well done. And because it's a James Gunn vehicle, it has a fantastic soundtrack. I mean, that's just a hallmark of anything that's James Gunn. Dude. And I've read multiple articles that he writes scenes around music, similar to Tarantino would say a music will inspire a scene. And that's very clear from this show as well.
James Gunn is going to be responsible for bringing hair metal back to the masses.
He will not let it die.
I mean, you know what? Like, I have not listened to more Poison and Slaughter and Firehouse that I have in the last 3 days, in the last probably 25 years. I like, oh my gosh. Between that, Cobra Kai, I'm like, oh my
gosh. Yes. First off, Cobra Kai and Peacemaker, from a musical standpoint, and some of the references more in Cobra Kai, is like, you realize that for those that grew up the majority of our childhood in the 80s, the 80s freaking rocked, man.
You know?
Like, we did not know how blessed we had it.
Packs,
yes.
Parachute pants.
Yes, like the 80s was really that decade where if you wanted to be awesome, all you had to do was want to be awesome.
Yeah.
Because nothing else mattered.
Right.
Just your utter desire that I am more awesome than you. And that's A-okay.
And that's why we are Prevenge of the Nerds. And our awesomeness levels are way up there.
There you go.
Oh, man. So let's, anything else you want to say about Peacemaker?
Watch it. Just again, for those in our audience that if you've not checked it out, had not had a chance to check it out, Please. I mean, I will say this, and I meant that I was almost texted to you, but I figured I would bring it up in the show. Mm-hmm. We talked about this right before the new year about probably what was our favorite show on Disney Plus based on the Marvel Universe. I think we both came about that's probably Hawkeye. Mm-hmm. And I've often said one of the things that if you kind of split the universe is Marvel versus DC, Marvel tends to do much better in live action. I think DC does much better in animation. Mm-hmm. I think Peacemaker, and I love the fact that it's, again, because it's by James Gunn, who's made great hay working for both companies in both universes. Peacemaker, based on only three episodes, I understand.
Mm-hmm.
Peacemaker may give Hawkeye a run for his money. Yeah,
I absolutely concur. And I mean, with what James Gunn did with the Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
And now with Peacemaker, that is what DC needs to do. They just need to give the keys to, I mean, yes, you have to keep Shazam, keep that, because that's more for the kids. But give the keys to James Gunn, because there's a lot of obscure characters in DC.
And I think this is what both he's done, what John Favreau has done, what Marvel did is out of necessity, because they needed to license some of their quote-unquote A properties to make money, to get money to create the MCU, to get Marvel Studios. DC has not necessarily had to do that, but there's only so many ways, and I think it's what you saw when they reintroduced Tom Holland as Spider-Man. We all know Spider-Man's origin story.
Yeah.
We all know Superman. We all know Batman. We all know enough about Wonder Woman, enough about The Flash for the most part. You know, a lot of these characters, what both universes have done is that, and again, we've said this before, if you're not a strong comics person, it's perfectly fine. You don't have to be. Again, Iron Man, Thor, Captain America, they're big names now.
Yeah.
But over a decade ago, when Marvel came out with Iron Man, these were their B-list characters. We're not talking Spider-Man. We're not talking the X-Men. We're not talking, Fantastic Four is kind of iffy. Where's that? But, we weren't doing that. Now, when you look on the DC side of it, Justice League, the Zack Snyder version is much better. You know, we'll see how the Batman, I love the thes, we're really, I'll make sure we get out there. But Suicide Squad, either version, is not Justice League, right?
Ooh.
You know, so, but Suicide Squad, I made a lot of money and did well with, again, more obscure characters. I mean, the most probably well-known character in Suicide Squad going in the first movie, Suicide Squad, which it was Harley Quinn. And Harley Quinn was the only reason Harley Quinn was even a thing was that she was so popular in the 90s Batman animated series show. I mean,
and she's never been part of the Suicide Squad in the comics. Up until that time.
Right. Right. So you're seeing with Ratcatcher 2 and Polka Dot Man and now Peacemaker, Judo Master, a lot of characters that we're seeing brought about that, again, it's the obscurity piece, but they all have backstory. They all have things that make them special, things that make them broken, cast of characters, and they interplay with some of the big names that you can bring in if you need to. But yeah, it's the ability to take Daredevil and dive into that. And James Gunn has shown that both with Guardians of the Galaxy, again, not an A-list comic by any stretch.
Yeah.
And now with the Suicide Squad and specifically Peacemaker, which, gosh, maybe a D-level character I mean, honestly, Amanda Waller is probably the most well-known character pre the movies and how he's interpreted them of this entire cast of characters. And he's really enhanced that. So this has just been, I've just been, and so it was a great way to bring about the last couple of days. So outstanding. So definitely go catch Peacemaker. You'll dig it.
I want to see a James Gunn Green Lantern or a James Gunn Green Arrow. I think both of those could just do amazing. But right now, I mean, I'm such a huge fan of Peacemaker that I just want to see anything.
But you got to give us Nathan Fillion as the Green Lantern. No one else can be him. Just like they could, because it had to be Ryan Reynolds as Deadpool. It has to be Nathan Fillion as the Green Lantern.
Hal Jordan for sure. You know, yes, I agree. And Nathan Fillion has been in some James Gunn movies. Just saying. Yes.
So I think that we can totally make it a thing. Oh, last thing. I keep saying last thing, but this is it. I think the other thing that James Gunn is doing, what I think DC needs to do, and why you do want to do it with more, with maybe not your primary characters, this Marvel has the PG world corner when it comes to these movies. Okay. Kids dress up as Iron Man, kids dress up as Thor. Yeah. They win Halloween, they win merchandising, and that's fine.
Yeah.
We both are wrestling fans. There's a point in time that you couldn't go, okay, no one's going to be the WWE because they've got PG wrestling on lock. So you need something to amp up the violence and the blood because you need to get those, you know, 18 to, you know, 40-year-old guys. And not even men, but 18 to 40-year-old adults who are going to watch these movies, right? That's what DC needs to do. And you don't honestly do it. We'll see how the Batman looks out. But it's harder to do with Superman. It's harder to do with Wonder Woman's a different. She can be a warrior. You definitely don't do it with Shazam. And I think you're right. You keep Shazam family friendly. The whole Shazam family, you keep family friendly. I am interested to see what The Rock's going to do. And hopefully at some point we'll get a Black Adam Peacemaker something. I just love to see that, a little interplay. But ramp it up. Do the violence, do the language, do the comedy, and make it dark.
My friend is.
Oh, you got a friend? Which friend are you? Oh, is that Lexi? Do you want to be in the podcast? You want to say hi?
Know what a podcast is.
Oh, okay. Well, hello there.
Hi, Lexi.
Lexi, that's Brian.
Also known as Brian, that's Dennis, but his opinion. I thought Brian Dennis.
Okay. So how are you doing, Leia?
Good.
Good?
I got 3 questions for you.
Oh, she's got 3 questions. Okay.
3. Okay, let's hit it.
Let's bring it on, girl. And then we're gonna get going.
How much do you like Star Wars? Do you like it more than this guy right here?
I gotta say, I do not like it more than this guy, meaning your dad, because I don't think anyone likes Star Wars more. But I like Star Wars a lot, especially the book of Boba Fett.
George Lucas might like it more than me.
I think George Lucas probably has made more money off of it than you, but I think authentic love, because remember, your love is your love has is unconditional. You don't get anything out of your love, okay?
Right, I got
a ranch, okay?
How much do you like this cute, or a scale from 1 to 10, how cute is this baby kitten?
It depends. What's the baby kitten's name?
Honey.
Then I like it a C. She's a C minus.
No, as in 1 through 10.
Okay, we're gonna give it a 3.
3?
Yeah, only because you're calling her honey and not Santa.
Fine. There it is.
We'll be careful because this chair is about to break.
What about Santa? How cute.
Santa gets a 10 out of 10. We're good there.
I said, by the way, how cute honey nor Santa is.
I would like to also take this time and say that 17 out of my 22 students at high school think Santa is a better name than honey.
It is a better name.
That's just because they're mostly all boys.
No, they're not, actually.
What?
It's actually pretty equal for my students in my class. All right, kiddo.
What's number 3?
One more question. Oh.
Yep. Did we forget?
Marvel, Star Wars.
DC?
DC. More. Which one do you like the best?
Marvel, Star Wars, or DC?
I guess so. Yeah.
Okay. I love that. We normally lump Marvel and DC under the Disney umbrella. I mean, Marvel and Star Wars. Okay. Yeah. Marvel, Star Wars, or DC? Peacemaker has made it a tougher fight, man. He really has. At this point, Marvel still wins. But again, I will say this. I'm more excited for the next Peacemaker episode than I am for anything to do with the Eternals.
Okay. Well, bye.
Why are you sticking us though, by the way? Oh, that's fine. All right, kiddo. I love you. Bye. I'll see you in a little bit. Yeah, bye, dude. Bye. For sure.
Marvel has no, I'm sorry, I mean to interrupt. I was just gonna say Marvel has done something that I didn't think it was possible. They've now pushed out 2 films that after watching them the first time, I had no desire to watch them again. In Black Widow and The Externals. I watched The Externals again because I go, I just want to catch all the little pieces. There was more to like in The Externals than there was in Black Widow. I just think it's already an obscure concept and they didn't do a good job. And I think a lot of they did too many flashbacks I love the way they tried to have like there's this big reveal when it came to to Icarus, which about 10 seconds into the movie, you knew what the.
Right.
Yeah. I did want to ask you this, and I know we didn't want to move forward. Yeah. I did want to ask you this. So one of the reasons I actually did watch it again, because in the movie, when they actually, there's this little kid, and I think it's, I can't think of the engineer's character's name at this point, but his daughter basically calls Icarus Superman. Yeah. And a couple times, and that like gives you like the cape and laser eyes,
right?
You gotta wonder, like, are they first of all, again, back to our old professional wrestling thing, you don't ever mention your competition, so I'm a little surprised that Marvel went there and go, hey, you're Superman, because I don't think we see DC going, hey, you're Iron Man, you know, like they want to get Steel and go, so are you Iron Man? You know, I'm just I was kind of surprised there.
I love that though. So like my whole thought on that whole thing is in the DC world.
I think I know where you're going. Okay.
They read Marvel comics.
Yes, yes, yes.
And in the Marvel world, they read DC comics, and their hero personas reflect on
our influence. Absolutely. Right.
So Captain America and Superman are not related, but I can't even think of what was inspired by each other.
Sure, you know? sure.
That's just where my headcanon goes.
No, and that would make perfect sense. And again, I just want to feel like that was like the one to feel like, oh, okay, right. So we're going there now.
And isn't there a Batman? Don't they call a Batman in it too?
There may be a Batman in it.
I think there's a Batman. Was the one
grab my attention. And again, The Externals. The only thing about it is I like the fact they brought in Star Fox at the end, and I'm loving the Ebony Blade. I think that was the part.
Well, and the voice, the voice that he's talking about is talking to
Blade. Yes,
Blade. Yeah.
Yes. So I mean, those things are I mean, I was the post credit scenes mm-hmm. were to me more than you know, look, okay, I hate to say it, you know, Rob Snow, you would never be as good as Jon Snow.
Right.
You know, yeah. I mean, Rob Stark would never be as good as Jon Snow. And well, he's proven it in a couple of different universes at this point. So
that was kind of my thing too with it. Like, I liked the movie, but it's nothing I'm going to watch. I'm going to watch several times.
Right.
I think it came out at the wrong time.
It really did.
And it was
their first in theater release during with the pandemic, right?
Yeah, I think so. Well, I know Black Widow would have been.
No, it was Black Widow, wasn't it?
It just didn't make sense after Endgame and with Thanos and stuff like that. Yes, they explain it, but I still don't buy it, you know. And Dane Whitman. Black Knight.
Yep.
Yeah. He needed a bigger part.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say this, if they actually do Marvel Knights, that's awesome. Because I mean, like, when I was working at the theater today, even the Morbius, the line on the tagline is a different kind of Marvel Knight.
Oh, beautiful.
And I'm like, beautiful. Dude, they're doing Marvel Knights. We got Daredevil now. We're getting Moon Knight now.
Mm-hmm. I mean, like, yes. Really excited for Moon Knight. Yes. Yeah. Again, it's not a bad movie. It just wasn't. It was a slower burn, which I think is fine. I mean, I think we get conditioned because of Avengers and so many others. It is so action packed, and it was also a dark movie that had so many scenes at night, and it was just like, okay, what's actually going on? I like the deviants. I just think they could have fleshed it out more. They tried to give you a little bit of the thing. And, you know, obviously, you know, they're showing how the externals have inspired things throughout history, whether it's Icarus, Athena, not the A, Athena. Like, they could have gone more to how Athena inspired Athena. You know, they had definite things they could have done there, which I think would have been more useful. It's a big team too, so you try to introduce them all, which shows you again the massive nature it takes to do an Avengers, a Suicide Squad, a Guardians of the Galaxy movie, where you are trying to introduce a myriad of characters at the same time and keep it all going. So I think that's also a credit to everyone that's done those team movies, the Russos, the James Gunns, and really show you again that it takes a lot of talent to do those. So
you know, like, I wish that the Eternals actually took place like right before the blip.
Right.
You know, right before the blip, and then they don't have to worry about connecting with Thanos or anything like that. You know,
or have it happen actually during the blip. I mean, that would have been it before they came back. Because then they could have also, what they could have done with this, and again, spoilers, is they could have explained, because I forget how many Eternals it is, but they could have said, when they reveal that the Eternals are made, not that they're not living beings,
right?
They could have explained, well, that's why none of us disappeared.
Yeah.
We're not living beings. So Thanos, you know, wiped out half of all living creatures, you know, so that they could say, well, that's why none of us were affected by the blip. It's not because we are Eternals, because I mean the blip was supposed to happen across the cosmos, right? Yeah. So all those things, I mean, I think that would have been very interesting to see. I did admit that I did have a honest, genuine jaw drop moment at the end of it, where what's the name of the celestial that they serve? Ashram, Arisham, something like that. Where they do the thing where they part, and I know I just watched it, I know you've seen it probably a while back, but they do the scene where it's Black Knight and Cersei standing there. And I love the diversity in the cast. I love the fact that they had, you know, multiple significant characters of color. Mm-hmm. You had a character who's deaf, you had a character who's gay. I mean, you had all those great things. But then you have the clouds part, and they show the face of the celestial and really get that scale of, no matter how powerful the Eternals are, they are nothing compared to the Celestial. And that was great. Like, all I got was, that's what Galactus should have been in Fantastic Four. Not some stupid kind of claw mouth thing, and the way that they did Tiamat coming out of the ground, and you know that big marble statue in the Indian Ocean. So that's what this movie did really well is it gave you large scale characters in proportionality to characters that would be on Earth, like human sized characters, and show you again like, oh wow, when we say Celestials, this is a large scale that could. You know, Thanos needed, you know, 6 gems to snap his fingers. Well, this one could actually kind of just thump us like a marble.
Right.
That part was really interesting, and I thought it was well done. It was just all the other stuff took so long to get there. And when you've got two big Hollywood names like Salma Hayek and Angelina Jolie, I don't know if they brought anything to it. I like Angelina's characters. Samuel, by the way, the plot was only in it for a little bit, and that was on purpose. Mm-hmm. Angelina, towards the tail end of it, definitely, you know, rehabbed some of the stuff with Thena's character. But anyway, so Black Widow and Eternals are probably one of these days we're probably going to do a full countdown of Marvel movies from our favorites, at least. I think I know my bottom two slots at this point.
So, my favorite part of Eternals is when Rob Stark tells Cersei that he loves her.
That's great.
And I like, the movie is okay. It's good. I mean, like, the most memorable thing is when Kit Harington, Jon Snow in Game of Thrones, tells the character named Cersei.
And if you know Game of Thrones, that should really make you fall over laughing right now.
Right. Yes. You know?
Yes.
Oh, buddy. So,
which is again one of those things that when the movie, because I didn't see the movie until it came out on Disney Plus. One of those things that I remember when the movie was out in the theaters, the memes are asking, people were saying that the memes are actually better than the movie because they had those things. You got those two characters from Game of Thrones. You have, again, a character named Cersei. You got so many things. You know, you've got, you know, Jon Snow who took on the black in Game of Thrones, actually using an ebony blade. I mean, you have all those things. And it's just like, okay, yeah. And then you have basically, no matter how hard he tries, Rob Stark not quite being good enough.
Right.
You know, your dad loved his bastard nephew more than he loved you, and you know, Ajax loved Cersei more than you. So what do you do? Yeah, absolutely.
Oh man. So we brought it up a little bit. We have got to talk about the Book of Boba.
Yes.
Bob. Let's talk. What about Bob? Man, what are your thoughts about what do you think about the Book of Boba so far? I mean, there's a couple things I don't like, but
okay. So I'm gonna bow to your Star Wars canon knowledge more than my own. I watched this strictly for pure entertainment. So if anything that's out of canon or doesn't follow through maybe some of the books, please, I mean, I will bow to your knowledge. Sure. I watch it strictly for how much I do or don't enjoy it, and I absolutely just love. I was gonna say that I actually like it better than Mandalorian. I really love Mandalorian, but I like it better. I love it more than Mandalorian. I mean, Boba Fett. Boba Fett is always when you look. But again, for someone that's watching it from the surface, when I would look at the most badass characters visually in Star Wars until some of the more recent characters, it was Vader number one, Boba Fett number two.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Boba Fett just looked. I mean, he looked like an intergalactic bounty hunter should look, right?
Right.
I mean, that helmet thing's got to have inspired so many different looks, right? And I love the fact that it takes place on Tatooine, which has been the center of so much of Star Wars. It's kind of going back to the roots. I like that. Yes. I like that, honestly. Unlike, you know, when you look at a lot of the movies anyway, they're these big, again, intergalactic soap operas, right? Book of Boba Fett, Bob, is, and even Mandalorian is still kind of an expansive show, right?
Yeah.
Bob is basically this Western in this, you know, ghost town. Mm-hmm. That's what it is. And they make it small. I mean, yes, you have, well, I guess they wouldn't consider aliens. They all kind of live on a planet. But I mean, there's the intergalactic piece of it. They give them really cool weapons. They give them great armor. But in the reality of it, it's basically a gangster slash Western film. That's what it is. And it's done so well. Ming-Na, I love her portrayal so much. And I love when they show him with the Sand People, the Tuscans. Here's what it is. It expands for me so much of the characters from episode 4. Episodes 4 and 5, those first characters you learn about and see in Star Wars. You know, the cantina, all those things that, you know, you watch, you go, okay. And it goes, let's go back to the roots and let's just explore that more. And that makes me just dig it so much.
So in episode 2, when he goes into that bar and he talks to that couple that the biker gang was messing with. So those two characters, and their names are blank. I'm blank on their names right now. But so those two characters are in a deleted scene of A New Hope hanging out with Luke Skywalker.
Oh, nice.
Toshi Station. So where they go, where Boba goes to is Toshi Station. Where Luke did, of course, was not able to pick up any freaking power converters.
So I was going to ask you the question that you asked me, because again, as the resident, you know, Star Wars aficionado of our tag team here, what is it? And I would love to hear the thing that you say you don't say. There's something you don't really dig. But what are your thoughts of it just overall as a show?
I love it, and I'm actually with. It's pretty close to Mandalorian, but I actually think I do like this a little bit more because of the character. The character's already known, so you already go into like, well, this is Boba freaking Fett.
Yeah.
And he's like that guy you had as a character. You had the toy. Always had him as the good guy in your head canon.
Yeah.
He looks
so flipping cool.
Right. You know, so he's like, of course he's going to work with Luke Skywalker and Han Solo and all that. It's, you know, blah, blah, blah. And now I love how they were able to grow the character through the Tuskens, through that tribe of Tuskens. I absolutely love it because that's real life. I mean, like that was his family. His family brought him in and he wanted to do whatever he could for his family. The one thing that I don't like, and when I say don't like, I'm still loving the show.
Right.
Is that I feel like Boba talks a lot.
He does. There's a lot of dialogue specifically.
Like, from, I mean, like, I would rather, like you said, like have him do some grunting or something like that.
Yeah.
And let Ming-Na Wen do all the talking for him.
Yes.
You know, except for like Boba should like never have any deep monologues, you know, it should just be like one or two sentences at a time. And the rest is just actions.
See, and can I give you a counterpoint to that?
Yeah.
So some of my favorite movies are the Godfather films, the Godfather series. And to me, especially watching Bubba, he's older, he's a little overweight, you know, he's still in better shape than this cat. He's sitting on the throne, you know, he's got to have the regeneration treatments at night and all that fun stuff. It was a little bariatric chamber. I got a little Michael Jackson vibes from, but that's just me. But it strikes me as Don Corleone in The Godfather Part 2. Brando's older. You know, well, after the, you know, I'm sorry, the end of Godfather Part 1. You know, Brando's older. You know, he's trying to, you know, pass on. You know, he understands that you have to fight, but he really only wants to fight when necessary versus when they show in Godfather Part 2, the young Vito itching for a fight, that sort of thing, or Sonny itching for a fight. You know, so it showed me, like, if you are someone that has spent your entire life in conflict, yes, you still want to have power. Yes, you still want to have respect. But you also get, if you can do this without having to shoot a laser off, why not? You know, so he's more into the fight smarter, not harder. So that's where I think where I like the fact that you get him, like him working through his logic.
Yeah.
Almost like this is why we do that. Again, it's just another take on it. But that's as he's sitting there, that's what strikes to me, is he's gone from bounty hunter to Godfather.
Yeah.
So I was just like, oh, so to me that works. I love my favorite character though, and I'm not sure. The majordomo for the mayor. He is without a doubt my favorite character. Just that wormy bureaucratic tone. Just love it so much.
I would have to agree with you until they brought in Black Kristanton. I freaked the hell out. It was 5:30 whatever in the morning.
Sure.
And here comes Black Kristanton, the bad Wookiee.
Yes.
Onto the screen, and I squealed. I squealed. I cried.
Yes.
I mean, like, yes. Minutes later, I went and found the first appearance, because I have his first appearance in comics.
Oh, okay.
And I'm like, oh my gosh, we're going to get Dr. Aphra hopefully sooner and later. But, you know, Black freaking Kristanton. And then in episode 3, we have Danny freaking Trejo as the Rancor trainer, and my life is freaking complete.
As we've talked before, you saw me on Facebook earlier today, Danny Trejo is without a doubt in my spirit animal. Right? So yes. So first off, I'm not as versed in the Star Wars comics as you are.
Yeah.
So I was really not familiar with Black Kristanton's character. So I just geeked out at a Wookiee for hire. I was like, oh, that's so cool. You know, and he just looked total badass, tall, the super long black fur. You know, he just had this way. You know who he reminded me of? He reminded me that if Samuel Jackson was a Wookiee, this is who he would be. Because from those grunts, you know he was saying mother effer. Like, that's just how he rolled. And remember, Samuel Jackson stands for, or the L stands for. So that was just such a, I was going to get it in. But that honestly, truthfully, I just thought, that's the thing about Boba Fett. For me, it does two things really, really well. I think it takes a very large Star Wars universe, and in a good way, shrinks it to a scale. But number two, everything just has swagger.
Yeah.
Like the Hutt twins, you know, who barely move with the female twin fanning herself in this desert heat because she's probably 18 tons. Right. They're both huge. And, you know, they mentioned Jabba, and then they go, you know, this is a good business. We're just going to leave. Like, bye. Right. You know?
Here's our Wookiee that we hired to kill you. Do whatever you want.
Yeah. You know,
and then he frees him.
Yeah. The youth that they recruit at the beginning of episode 3 and them chasing the majordomo on the
bullpen game.
Yeah. On the speeder bikes, which was a sea light out of Greece. I mean, it's just, again, just all the little things that they bring into that make it, again, very Earth, without it being
grounded, very grounded. Yeah,
yeah. Like, you look at it, you go, okay, I can see that. You know, it's just very, very cool.
One last thing about Black Kristanton is, so he has a scar over one of his eyes that was put there by Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Oh, that's awesome!
Because Black Kristanton was hired to track him, and I forget how that story goes, but Black Kristanton was a gladiator, so he was run off of Kashyyyk, and then he became a gladiator in the arena. That's where that the gladiator line comes from.
Sure.
Man, definitely, if you're not watching Book of Boba, make sure you watch your Bob every week, make sure you watch your Peacemaker every week.
Yes,
Brian,
One thing before I don't hate to interrupt your thought, but I gotta say this: both Peacemaker, you gotta say the same thing for Mandalorian, but the two we've talked about so far, Peacemaker and the Book of Boba Fett, both of these are incredibly well done shows, which take, again, not A level characters. Mm-hmm. There's not a historically anyway. There's not an A level character in either of these shows. There's no Luke. There's no Han. There's no Yoda. You know, there's no Jedi period. You know, there's no Sith period so far in Book of Boba. There's no, you know, we haven't seen Batman or Superman. We haven't seen Kid Flash in Peacemaker. Okay. Hey, And it shows, though, which, again, that's one thing I think which is so cool about comics as a whole, and I'm nerd-verse, this is going to be my real quick, you know, this is why we're so awesome thing, is you have in both of these companies and in both of these just canons of characters, you know, again, 80-plus years at this point of characters upon characters upon characters. And when you take a minute, and you can tell the shows are done by people who love the material, who've read it, who assembles, because it's not just a one-person show, right? Who read it, who started around a team who either already was familiar or took the time to really get familiar and do those little things, right? You know, right? It's not just, let's just have a spider bite a kid and have him become super strong. Oh, let's have a spaceship fall from the stars. Hey, let's have a kid in an alley and his parents get shot. We know those things, right? But it's all these other things that you get, like you said, you geeked out. Go, wait, I gotta find a comic where he made his first appearance, because that's that moment, right? Mm-hmm. Those are just such great little things that I think what makes us the nerds that we are, but I also think that make these shows that are great for people who don't have to, you know, have, you know, volumes of comic books and the DVDs and the movies and all that sort of stuff, because they're well done and they find the humanity. Mm-hmm. Each one of these, and that's just such a great thing that they're still doing with two shows. And I know we're going to talk about a third show that does a great job of that as well.
Yeah. With that, go ahead. Why don't you go ahead and introduce the next show that we're going to talk about?
Yeah, this is our week. This is our, by the way, for our first podcast of the new year. We're just covering all the great stuff that's out there. So talk about great content. So next up, they want to talk about where you've got your Peacemaker in the DCU, you've got your Boba Fett part of the Star Wars universe over on Disney Plus, and Netflix. We didn't forget about you. Right. Netflix graced us at the beginning of the new year with the fourth season of Cobra Kai, the baddest, coolest name ever in martial arts. Absolutely.
Well, I mean, maybe only second to Eagle Fang, but.
Eagle Fang. Oh, God. I do not have a tattoo, Bradley. I'm not going to lie to you. There's a little piece of me that goes, I'll forever say, you know, I might have to bite the bullet and get a, for those of you that don't see us visually, Brad has got a couple. I have not joined the tattooed universe. I thought, you know, I guess it probably be something Batman related, obviously. But you know what? Eagle Fang might make his way into the conversation. But yes.
You know?
Yes.
I mean, I guess, like, I'm going to take this back to Peacemaker. When we talk about Eagle Fang, we have to talk about Eagly.
Yes!
Eagly, oh, my God. Eagly is...
Come on, the scene so where he hugged Peacemaker.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Yes. Yeah. And, of course, then he bit the one character, Waller's daughter, which was great. Yeah. By the way, there's nothing... did you notice the thing? Because we didn't even talk about... by the way, it's Country Grammar, the Nelly song. Mm. But we didn't even talk about the pumped up kicks part. But also the little things such as like when they mentioned that in DC, well, at least in the show, they talk about how the projects are way too obvious. You know, hey, you call it a project Starfish, it's a big starfish. And, you know, when you call it Project Butterfly. Well, at the end of episode 3, we understand why it's called Project Butterfly.
Yep.
I think it'd have been called Project Tooth Fairy, too, but that's a Hellboy reference. But, yeah. So, yeah. Whatever works for you. Yes. But
awesome.
Back to season 4 of Cobra Kai. I do want to talk about Cobra Kai, period. I mean, it's been great.
Right. I mean, like, strike first, no mercy, man.
Yes, yes. So, Bradley, I'll start off with you. So do you want, let's just start here. So, again, if you've not seen Cobra Kai at all, what have you been doing with your life for the past few years? But if you have not, if you have time, all these shows you can binge, obviously. I'm going to assume most people out there have at least a Netflix streaming service. Where episode 4, I believe there's 10 episodes per season, so it's 40 episodes. Cobra Kai is a really cool thing to just invest some time, watch it from 1 through the 4th season. It is just a really good show, especially if you, like Bradley and I, grew up watching and loving at least 2 of the original Karate Kid movies.
Yeah.
So we'll start off with that. So Bradley, tell us a little bit about what makes Cobra Kai or the Karate Kid universe such, what makes you a fan of it?
So season four, they really dug a little bit deep into some martial arts philosophy. Mm-hmm. I speak for someone who's been in martial arts for many, many years. I teach martial arts at Triumph Martial Arts in Clive, Iowa, and I'm a second degree black belt in Taekwondo. And one of the things that I really, really dug about everything was that Miyagi-Do was all about defense and the mm-hmm. Cobra Kai was all about offense. And then
yes.
the whole series is about, you can't have one without the other. You
right.
have to have offense. You have to have defense. Sometimes you don't have a choice but to strike first. You
know, right.
Sometimes you can't be just defensive. I mean, even if you go back to Danielson's illegal kick to the face in 1984, I mean,
yes.
that was a strike first.
Yes.
That was not defense, you know, but I love the way how everything ended up working out. They, at the beginning of season four, they kind of shook everything up, and you had people who was working with Miyagi-Do were now Cobra Kai, and likewise, and then they bring in Terry Silver because we knew it was going to happen.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
And it worked. And I really dug that character.
Absolutely. As much. And I, you know, a part, not to interrupt you, no, but what we got to see was, so again, let's back up just a little bit. So again, for anyone that's not watched Cobra Kai or nothing we're talking about. So Cobra Kai is based on, so back in the, I think it was 84, where you had the, I mean, not only cult classic, but one defining, again, it shows you how off the 80s were, the original movie, The Karate Kid. And yeah. it's, and again, because it's been so ingrained in our pop culture now for so many years, it was just such a great moment, point in time where, you know, you saw kids, you know, coming out of a movie theater, attempting to crank it. I think I broke stuff in my mom's house. I thought I could do the crank it. Mm-hmm. But it was one of the first where you took an Asian character, he's from Okinawa, Mr. Miyagi, by the late, great Pat Morita, RIP. And they didn't make him a caricature. You know, yes, he spoke broken English because he's an immigrant, but for the most part, they treat his character with respect, with yeah. reverence. It talked about bullying in a very, you know, clear way.
Yeah.
It starred Billy Zabka as the jackass of the 80s because he wasn't. That's a compliment. You know, Ralph Macchio, who I think was 26 when the movie came out because yeah. he doesn't age. I swear him and Dick Clark have to be related. Him, Dick Clark, and Paul Rudd have to be right. related somehow.
Yeah.
They all have the Lazarus Pit. That's what's happening.
Right.
So it took that movie, and then to go into Karate Kid Part 2, and then we go into, then again, sometimes when you make a trilogy, as Brad and I say, you stop at 2.
Yeah.
So, but we did have a Karate Kid Part 3. We also had a next Karate Kid. I want a Hillary Swank just drop through. I really do.
She's coming in. I yes. guarantee she's going to be in season okay. 5.
So, but real quick here, I want to do one cautionary note for the
right.
people who are producing Cobra Kai. We have loved seasons 1 through 4. They have been outstanding. We love the fact that you brought in, obviously, Daniel and Johnny. We love the fact that you brought in a lot of the, especially, I forget if it was season 1 or 2, but a lot of the other folks from Cobra Kai, like mm-hmm. Duff. You gave us Creasy, you gave us Terry Silver, you gave us Kimiko, you gave us Chosen. You've done such a great job. You gave us Allie, I want to say. I believe we had a
yeah,
machine well, sighting. Season 3. Here's what we do not need. We do not need Jaden Smith.
Agree.
Do not do that.
Agree. You know what? And with that, by default, we don't need Jackie Chan either.
But we will take Taraji P. Henson. I feel like she will bring something.
I agree, but she always brings something. She yes, always brings something.
But we don't need Dre. I actually would kind of like to see Mr. Hong. I'm not going to lie. But we don't need Dre. We yeah. don't. Maybe you can get his dad to do something for the soundtrack.
But you know what?
Here's what you can do for us. If you're going to do it, just have a scene where someone's rapping, parents just don't understand.
Yeah.
You know, well, that's close enough.
Will Smith is one of the producers of the show.
I know. Yes. Yeah. Yes. So, Will, you've tried very hard to make your son into a star. We all agree, but nepotism is always a bad thing.
Yes.
It's okay. You just stop. But anyway.
Yeah.
And by the way, Will Smith, did you hear me? I'm just kidding. If you want to come visit, want to say hi, do. I'm still waiting for Hancock, too. If you can manage that. I think we can figure it out.
You know what? Yes. We next week, let's yes. do, let's prevenge Hancock. And let's pitch a series, or let's pitch a new movie, a new series.
Down with that.
let's talk about Hancock next week.
Absolutely. Okay. So now to get back on track. Okay. So again, I love the fact they brought in the martial arts philosophy, and it is that yin yang, that push pull that you need both sides of it. Mm-hmm. And it also talked about how, what I really liked is that you had the interplay where, you know, Johnny and Daniel-san had to spend time where they're trying to figure out how they can work together. And it shows that, you know, as men, we're all stuck at 16.
Yeah.
Now all that stuff, no matter what happened, I love the fact that you keep pointing out it wasn't a legal kick to the face. Because think about that moment that on one point makes Daniel's life and B that kind of throws Johnny's off the rails isn't a legal kick that was allowed to stand. But also you got to see as the season went on between Kreese and Silver, because Silver didn't want to come back to Cobra Kai. I mean, it almost looked like it's the mob. Like every time I think I'm out, they drag me back in. And so him pulling him in, but then you see Silver starting to take over.
Yeah.
And it delved into their backstory when I think they're in Nam was when they met. Yeah. So it shows a lot of that sort of thing. I thought they did, and they did a great tribute to Ed Asner, RIP again. Yeah, they did. We lost some great ones in the last year or so. But I just love it, brought a lot of the humanity and the philosophy. Mm-hmm. Of that, because remember, Kreese's big thing is, you know, mercy is for the weak. You know, so basically, you know, you don't have weakness. Silver brings up everybody's got a weakness. Part of your job is to understand that. Yeah. So one is very forceful. The other one is more psychological. You know, and you see the manipulation. So again, I just thought, you know, again, you could tell. This project is made by people who love it, people who have seen the movies, who really start. And then you gotta figure they get a lot of consultation from Machio and Zabka of where do you see these characters having evolved, you know, 30, 40 years since the fight, and honestly, what their kids, because their kids are a big part of this, what their kids and the kids that they mentor, how this would be. So it's just very, very well done.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't add. Oh, well, I do want to talk about the ending of Cobra Kai.
Yes.
The end where, you know, Daniel-san and Johnny finally decide that there's only one way to defeat them. Terry Silver you know, figures out, or not, doesn't figure out, he knows the weakness of Kreese. Kreese is going to go away for a little bit.
Yep.
Silver is going to bring in the bad boy of karate. I guarantee it.
Yes.
And at the end, we see, who do we see at the grave of a Mr. Miyagi?
Oh, geez. Oh, my God. Why is my brain stopping? Save me. Save
Chosen.
Me.
Chosen.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Yes.
And, you know, you end the show with a smile and you're like, yes. Yes.
Well, they do a great job of, again, pointing out so many of the little things that made the show the first two movies especially great. It did definitely bring in stuff from Karate Kid Part 3. And they did, and not that that movie was out there, but, you know, there was definitely a drop-off between, you know, especially, I personally like two better than one. I mean, the fight, I think, I liked it being in Okinawa. I think visually it was a little bit cooler. Zabka, I think, was a much better villain than Chosen. Chosen was just kind of like, me and Chosen could hang out. I like the ice breaking scene. That's Kimiko.
I had that toy.
Yeah, do you?
I used to. I had the Karate Kid toy where he breaks the ice. Yeah.
Yeah, so it did a great job of that, and I really like the fact that they did a great job with so many of the characters. My favorite, I'll ask you before I say mine. Who, if you take out Macho and Zabka, who is your favorite? Let's say from the ones we've seen introduced, probably the best way to do it.
Yeah.
So for the character that's been introduced as part of the show.
Miguel.
Who's your favorite? Miguel?
Miguel.
Okay.
Who is DC Comics Blue Beetle, by the way?
Really?
Yeah, he's gonna be Blue Beetle.
Oh, wonderful.
Jaime Ramirez?
Yeah, Jaime Reyes.
Reyes.
Yes.
Without a doubt, I think Miguel gets it. Like, he's more. I don't like Sam. I'm not a fan of Sam very much. Miguel, I feel like kind of gets more of the of what the martial art is. Martial arts.
Well, you know. I think they did a great job. I'll tell you mine is here in a second. But what I like about it, and I think this actually would happen. And again, I think they play a lot with the family dynamics.
Yeah.
So if you go back to the Karate Kid movies, let's go back to the first one. You've got, you know, Daniel Russo, poor kid, moved from Reseda with his mom, mm-hmm. you know, got bullied a lot as a kid, didn't quite fit in, you know, after the prom queen, you know, does a decent job with that. Again, wins this fight, becomes super popular, goes off in his life. Not his life is completely easy, but, you know, he wins the All Valley. He goes and kicks Chosen's ass in a fight to the death, you know, with kind of no one died, but it was what's supposed right. to be. Comes back, you know, wins it. Oh, how great was that scene where Johnny goes, wait a minute. So the second tournament, they just put you in the finals? And he goes, yeah. He goes, wait, what? I was a two-time champ too, but I had to fight my way through the tournament both times. Yeah. And then you've got Zabka, who, you know, in one night only loses the tournament through an illegal kick to the face, loses his sensei, the dojo falls apart, his life falls apart, all this sort of stuff. So now you jump ahead and look at their kids. So because Zabka isn't there, his kid lives a very similar life as what Russo's was going through in the first movie. Because Russo becomes successful, has a car dealership, becomes affluent, his kids are pricks.
Yeah.
His kids, I mean, his kid, like when you said Sam, I'm assuming you mean Samantha, the daughter.
Yeah, Samantha.
So between her and his son, yeah, I mean, they both are, it's really the son. Yeah. They both are jerks, right? So they're both entitled. So I like the fact that you have, again, the ongoing thing of, you know, the kid that had nothing, who achieves things, unfortunately has overdone by giving his kids everything. Yeah. And the kid who was supposed to be the golden child, because life didn't work out the way, his kids had to struggle. And so they've almost created the other a generation down. So I just think that's, again, very well done, where it does something. This was, because sometimes they jump to another universe for a second. Look at like Harry Potter.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes it becomes really easy to soft sell. Like, well, if you're in Slytherin, you're evil. Right. Mm-hmm. And they did a good job of sometimes talking, well, not, you know, not everybody's in Slytherin is evil. Not everybody who's not a Slytherin is good. Right. Mm-hmm. So the idea that Cobra Kai was, oh, they're all jerks. They're all villains. They all look at karate the wrong way, martial arts the wrong way. And they've done a great job of showing Cobra Kai is much more convoluted than that, you know. Yeah. And again it's that strike first mentality. Well, sometimes if you've been hit enough, you learn to strike first.
Yeah,
right. So there is a big piece of that. So that's why my favorite character is Hawk. I just love him so, and the journey with the hair lip and you know, the first season really being bullied, and then, you know, show him, you know, getting the mohawk and the hawk tattoo and really kind of feeling his oats and becoming like the Zabka of the series for a little bit. And then a lot of the redemption story towards the tail end of season 3 and all of season 4. Mm-hmm. Not to have spoiler alerts, but then the tournament is a fantastic tournament.
Yeah.
But I do have one very essential question about season 4 that I've got to get your feedback on.
Okay.
So this is important. So I want you to think long and hard. I want your honest opinion about this. Positive or negative, Carrie Underwood in the finals. How you feel about that performance?
Is the volume on or off?
The volume is off, but the video is on.
I'm good.
All right, and there's that.
Yeah, but, yeah. So, all right. Well, same question to you, my friend.
Yeah. My answer is so similar to yours, other than I just like, wait, what? 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 This is, I mean, what?
It was out of left field. It was definitely out of left field. I mean, like, yeah.
Right. I wanted like them to bring out like an 80s band.
I like, know. You know. I thought Stan Bush was coming out for sure. Or
dude, I wanted Axl Rose, like fresh out of rehab, bloated gut, balding. Right.
With a bottle of vodka.
Yeah, saying welcome to the jungle. You know, I wanted that, you know. Yeah. I wanted to find the original members of Rat. That's what I wanted. You know, I wanted Warren and I wanted Cherry Pie. That's what I want. Right. You know, but you know, we got
R.I.P. Jenny Lane.
Yes, nice, thank you. But Carrie Underwood, so if you haven't gotten there, there's a Carrie Underwood sighting. I saw someone on Facebook go, "Why is Carrie Underwood in my Cobra Kai finale?" And we, you know what? That's a question we all asked ourselves.
But there again, like if I could have been in there, I would.
I just really wanted her to. I would have loved to see her like do some interview talking about how. You know, it was her seminal movie in childhood. She learned so much, but no, they right. just want to put like, someone it, famous in this.
They couldn't have got Peter Cetera, or they couldn't have got, or they could have at least got her to sing like "Beat the Best." You know, like
yes,
sing the Karate Kid song. You know, so speaking before I forget, do you remember the episode with the girl with the it's Daniel's cousin, but. She's going to school to become a child psychologist.
I believe so. Yes,
that's Ralph Macchio's real life daughter.
Is it? Yes. Awesome.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I saw that. I'm like, that's really cool. That's a little fun.
You got to love those little things that happened there. Similar to when you brought in Lock and Key, and that's actually Stephen King's son. It's like, of course it is. Of course it is. Still kick myself. I didn't catch that reference. But Brad, like, I do feel before we move forward, there's something I feel I need to let you know that I am the man. Who will fight for your honor? I'll be your hero. I can't even do it. I can't even do it.
Man, I was like, I was trying to come in, but I'm like, I don't remember the words of the song, sadly.
Oh my gosh.
I'm going to listen to Peter Cetera.
Yes. Yes. Very soon. Yes.
It's going to go right into my now 80s hair metal playlist that I now have on that I'm working on. I'll make it public so anybody can check out what I'm listening.
There we go. So before we transition, because I feel like I need this because you know Brian uses this podcast a lot for self-disclosure therapy.
Yeah,
is this? So I had watched the original. I saw the original Karate Kid first time I saw it on television, and then we rented the video, and so I wanted to see without commercial and all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. So the first one, the Karate Kid movie I saw in the theater was Karate Kid Part 2 when they go to Okinawa. Mm-hmm. So if you've seen the Karate, I'm sure you've seen the Karate Kid Part 2 multiple times. At the end of Karate Kid Part 2, the last scene before it goes to the credits and the Glory of Love song comes, which is a great song, totally mm-hmm. 80s.
Oh,
but
yeah.
That's a terror high pitch. I don't see how he does without blowing out his vocal cords. There's a picture of Mr. There's just a headshot of Mr. Miyagi smiling because Daniel's son has survived the fight to the death by tweaking someone's nose. All right. And so but as I'm walking out of the theater, my mom shared with me, and my mother, God rest her soul, she's a wonderful woman. She really is. But she actually goes, wow, Mr. Miyagi is sexy.
Oh my gosh.
I cannot express to you. There are not words to talk about the trauma of hearing your mom. Because in my head, Mr. Miyagi, Pat Morita, RIP, was going to find me and train me, right? Because I'm going to be the black karate kid. That's going to happen, right?
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
then, like, for mom, then all I thought was, but my mom can't think you're sexy. You're Mr. Miyagi. Like, what is this? So. Yeah, so I wanted the nerdverse to know that Brian Dennis's mother thought Miss Miyagi was sexy, and I'm still trying to figure out what to do with that. So,
Brian, that is actually the perfect segue into
is it?
My tat.
Okay, I'm loving this. Let's hit it.
So my tat for you this week is a fight. So we're going to do some fan debt. We're going to do some fighting here. So I'm going to give you a character. Then I got a list of characters. You got to tell me if this character would be able to beat this character or not.
Okay.
All right. The character that you are representing is Mr. Miyagi. You're maybe it.
Maybe could, future you could have daddy. Been
father. Yeah.
You yes. Been yeah. Father. My real daddy. Yes.
All right. Absolutely. Now, are you ready to take
yes.
Mr. Miyagi down the gauntlet. By the way, I'm going to be doing some fandom. We'll talk about that later. But okay, so Mr. Miyagi.
Running the gauntlet, Mr. Miyagi.
Versus Santa Claus.
Oh, yes. Yes. Okay. And I'm thinking about these fights Mortal Kombat style. Okay. So we having this fight in a dojo, in the tournament, or at the Owl Valley, or are we at the North Pole? Like, give me where this fight occurs.
This is occurring at Walmart.
Beauty, even better, because we know there's no better place to be on Christmas Eve than Walmart.
Right.
So first off, it's going to be completely crowded because they'll have you know, three registers open. So with that being said. Miss Miyagi versus Santa Claus. So I think this one would actually be a tough fight because I don't see either one instigating. Mm-hmm. So we talked before that Miyagi-Do karate is all about defense, all about blocks and counter strikes. Santa obviously is a jolly old fellow, and yeah. I get the feeling that he would not be Cobra Kai and strike first. So I see the two of them circling each other with eventually the elves surrounding the Walmart aisles and having one of the elves pull his perfect duff and go put him in a body bag. Yeah. And at that point, Santa now feeling the pressure from his elves, who, by the way, you ever wonder if the elves had a union? I am curious about that. But with that being said, I think that would evoke Santa to finally strike first. Miss Miyagi defends himself. He tries body blows. The gut from Santa can absorb the blows with no real issue. Santa parries back. Miyagi's put on his heels. But finally, Miss Miyagi, with all the skills that he has, pulls not the crane kick, but the counter-strike blows from Karate Kid Part 2 as he slowly makes those red cheeks even redder with the strikes, and Santa drops to his knees, and as Miss Miyagi pulls back on that tuft of hair, and he goes, live or die, man, live or die. Santa goes, ho, 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 and Miss Miyagi, though, wants everyone to know that he is truly the badass, takes Santa down at the hush.
Okay.
Of the Walmart crowd.
All right. So that actually reminds me of something really quick here. So how much did it cost for Santa to park his sleigh?
How much?
Nothing. It's on the house. All right.
That may be the epitome of a dad joke I've ever had one. So, by the way, this may influence my picks this week because over the weekend I have been binging a Celebrity Deathmatch. So this may actually flavor some of my comments.
Which a Celebrity Deathmatch definitely should come back. All right, but Mr. Miyagi versus Batman, Michael Keaton, 1989 Batman. You have to go on the record. Yeah, record. I can't talk. You got to go on the record and say, you've already gone on the record saying that Mr. Miyagi can defeat and kill Santa Claus. So, can Mr. Miyagi defeat Batman in Okinawa?
You giving him the home field advantage?
I'm going to give him the home field advantage.
Okay.
No, you know what? All right, now.
That's fine. No, we're going to roll. We're doing it in Okinawa. That's cool. That's fair. Okay. Fair. That's fine. So here's where my head goes. So Mr. Miyagi, again, Miyagi-Do Karate versus Batman, who has a strong connection to Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Batman is a samurai. So we're talking Keaton Batman.
Yep.
So my thought goes to this. So the Keaton Batman was not the most physically imposing Batman. I would say he was probably the most cerebral of the Batman. Mans, whatever the plural Batman would be. I guess a Batman's.
I really did.
Yeah, you go down with the Batman's. Okay.
I like it.
With that being said, so he would try and get into Miyagi's head, and maybe we'll start with the shared trauma that they both lost their parents. Miyagi made it back to Okinawa just in time to see his father die. He lost years with Kimiko. Batman has an unrequited love with Talia al Ghul. Are there ways that they can come to an accord? I think, again, at this point, Mr. Miyagi would try and maybe have that peaceful moment with Batman. At this point, Batman would go strike first. Keaton attempts to, you know, put the bat cuffs on him, things of that nature. Miyagi manages to get away from Batman's initial attempts to wrap him up, cuff him, to subdue him. At this point, I think Miyagi, if Batman is not given the utility belts, if it's truthfully based on physical fighting prowess, Miyagi, while he's probably easily 25 years older, and we're talking 89, 90 Batman versus, you know, where Miyagi would have been, I still, and it hurts me to my heart, I can see Miyagi beating Batman to the point that Batman, while not taken out like Santa was, Batman will bow, and he will basically, almost like in chess,
okay,
he withdraws from the fight.
Okay.
So that's how Miyagi does it. That's the answer that my soul can accept, by the fact that you gave me a Miyagi versus Batman battle, because in my head Miyagi is the ultimate ruler of the hand as well.
Right.
So,
right.
He's racing. He was Ra's al Ghul's teacher. Okay, that's what's happening there.
Right. All right. I dig it. And are you ready for this?
Yes, I am.
Batman, or not Batman, but Mr. Miyagi.
Sure.
Versus Bugs Bunny.
Oh. Okay. Again, gotta talk setting. Are we talking Looney Tunes universe with all the physics, or in the real? Okay. Shoot. What if they... Well, okay, so if they're both... Okay, you don't even go down a bad path. I'm just going to do it. With both of them being in the Looney Tunes universe, so both of them have the physics of the Looney Tunes universe working to their favor, I would say this will probably be the quickest victory for Miyagi. Bugs Bunny is not a fighter. Bugs Bunny gets away with due to cleverness and stealth and has to be able to outsmart his more dim-witted foes, such as Elmer Fudd and Daffy Duck. Miyagi is a very smart man. Miyagi also is a military veteran. So beyond his training with karate, he also has years spent in the military. So at this point, not only does he beat Bugs, but I'm going to just go there and say he uses Bugs Bunny, because Miyagi is also a trained chef. He uses Bugs Bunny to make soup, and he uses it to feed. He makes rabbit soup out of bug. Well, I guess it would be bunny soup. Okay. Right, what the hell is the difference between a rabbit and a bunny? I'm just curious with that one. So anyone that wants to comment, tell us what the difference between a rabbit and a bunny. I'm sure there actually are differences. But he uses Bugs to make a wonderful entree of soup that he and Daniel-san enjoy following the confrontation.
I like it. All right.
And he hangs the rabbit feet from the car.
That Daniel drive.
And he uses butter fuzzy dice. Yes, sir.
Actually, I think there is a rabbit foot.
I think there is too. Yeah. All right. Okay, I'm going to hell. All right.
Mr. Miyagi. I'm actually, this next one, I might be going there. Mr. Miyagi versus Gandhi.
Dude, really?
Really?
Dude. Okay, first off, you are definitely going to hell. But seriously, Miyagi versus... Okay, so now, again, I love the clarifying here. Are we talking the actual Gandhi, or are we talking Sir Ben Kingsley, a.k.a. Trevor, a.k.a. the fake Mandalorian? Are we talking the actor, or are we talking the real historical person?
I will let you decide on that one. You can play
again,
that.
So I can stomach myself. It's gonna be Sir Ben Kingsley, okay? And so in my head, Sir Ben Kingsley is, because I gotta make this work for me. So, but the fact he's British, you know, maybe he's at the pub and he's had one too many. And similarly to Kreese at the end of the All Valley and Karate Kid Part 1, he's tied one on. They're in the parking lot. Miyagi's trying to get in this vehicle. Maybe he's on a layover flying from Okinawa. I don't even know if you would fly through Great Britain to get from Okinawa to the U.S., but that's how we're going to make planes work for this analogy. And so, you know, he sits in there in that full Trevor, you know, that drunken stupor, He's looking for Morris, his Hundun that he left in Tay Lao, and he instigates a couple things. You see Miyagi. I mean, this is almost a fight. This is almost a scene for scene where Miyagi gets him to punch out through the two different windows. And again, Miyagi then holds him up against it. Before he can give his spiel, though, Trevor slips into the Mandalorian. Tries to talk his way out of this. At that point, Miyagi is just incensed at this, that he takes Sir Ben Kingsley by the back of the head and just slams him in to the concrete and knocks him out and walks away a bitter but still undefeated champion.
I have to give you extra credit points for using Ben Kingsley's characters as your Gandhi, and then not even bringing up Gandhi in your fight at all. Touche, sir. Touche.
I just couldn't do it. I just like, wow.
I couldn't do it. I wasn't going to say anything because it's Gandhi.
Because in reality, come on now. Who was right. What was it?
I was Mother Teresa in here too. So, I couldn't do it. I was like, no. But I did put Yoda versus Mr. Miyagi.
Okay. All right, before we go there, do you remember in Fight Club? I think there actually is a moment in Fight Club where Brad Pitt and Edward Norton are talking. I want to say, I can't remember if it was Pitt or Norton's character, same guy, right? Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
Is one of them said they wanted to fight Gandhi. One of them literally said they'd fight Gandhi. And I can't remember which one. Well, I think it might have been Brad Pitt. But one of them said they'd actually would fight Gandhi. So, which, okay. All right. I think Gandhi legit... You remember, I'm assuming you know you're familiar with Street Fighter. Yeah. What's the name of the character from Indian Street Fighter? That's how I envision Gandhi fighting with elongated limbs and all that sort of thing. Yeah. So I feel like Gandhi would not be an easy win. Okay. All right. So again, we're talking Star Wars where the Force is a thing or in our quote unquote real world.
I would have to say probably in the Star Wars world. I feel like he'd have the Force anywhere he goes.
Okay.
Hey, who would win, Mr. Miyagi or Yoda?
Who's Mr. Miyagi?
You are grounded until you watch all of the
Karate Kid movies. That might have just called Sir Revenge school points. We've never banished anyone from our universe, but that might be a Jar Jar Binks level offense. There.
Right. We will discuss this later.
You can't ground me for just not knowing
from it.
Yes, there are certain things you need to see to know.
When
you are the fruit of that man's loins, if you don't know Mr. Miyagi, I mean, that's a thing.
Miyagi-gi?
Go ask your mother who Mr. Miyagi.
I love how she keeps adding the gigi at the end of it, by the way.
I know, which I kind of dig, actually.
Yeah, it's kind of like that would be like his DJ name.
It's like Mr. Magoogie.
Yes. Now that's the fight we need in Miyagi versus Mr. Magoo, but give Mr. Magoo like daredevil powers.
Right.
Okay. So Miyagi versus Yoda. All right, I'm going to go. I know we still got our cameo going on. I'm trying to give you the answer.
Yeah.
This one, I think.
You know who Yoda is.
She does know who Yoda is. She just wants attention now. This one, Bradley, I feel would be the quickest of the fights. They're going to fight, but it's going to be very quick. So here it goes. Because Miyagi and Yoda are, and I think that's why you picked, they're very similar people at their core. So they would want to have a fight. It's similar to like, if you've seen Rocky 3, where it's Creed and Rocky at the end of it, they just want to know.
Mm-hmm.
They just want to know. Hi, Zanna. So as they're sitting there and they're going to have their battle, you see, you know, Miyagi looking at Yoda, Yoda looking at Miyagi, and the fight commences. And right as Miyagi attempts to make his first strike, Yoda holds up his hand and levitates Mr. Miyagi. And Miyagi goes, badass I am, and drops him. In the fight.
Okay.
Just shows him that in a Force universe, he could not lay a finger on him, and that would be the end of the fight. So no real violence, no bloodshed, mutual respect. But at the end of the day, as great as Mr. Miyagi is, Yoda is still MF and Yoda.
Okay.
I heard you say like one or two bad words.
Oh, you're okay. All right.
And I also heard you say a bad word today too, Daddy.
Yeah, I know. I said a bad word. Okay. All right, kiddo. Well, why don't you tell Brian good night? I'll be upstairs in a little bit.
Like when?
Here in like 10 minutes. 10 or 15 minutes. Okay. All right, kiddo. Love you.
Probably going to be more like an hour.
Probably. All right. I have two more.
By the way, I love her sideways shade. It is great.
Right? Oh, she's yeah, getting that's really totally good at the shade.
Yeah. She gave you a couple pieces there. All right, bro. What's next?
All right. So, actually, I got one more.
Okay. So right now, he's I think he's 4-1 because I think it's his only loss.
Yep.
I mean, Yoda's his only loss. Yep.
Danielson.
Of course.
Mr. Miyagi versus of course. Danielson.
Of course. This is the fight.
Both in their prime.
This is what we want. This is the main event. This is why people put down their dollar. Okay. This is teacher versus student, right?
And you could do that on anchor.com or you could do that at patreon.com/fandemic. Make sure you say PVOTN in the comments.
So here we go. So we've got Dan at his prime, and I think Dan's at the peak of his powers after Karate Kid Part 2. So Miyagi going to say him at the peak of his powers, probably about 10 years before he meets Danielson, when he's probably in his late 40s. Okay. So Miyagi, again, almost like final form, right? Like he's at that perfect intersection as a master, but who is still youthful enough to really use his wits as well as his physical prowess. And Daniel, again, coming into his own and filling his oats. He's just, again, he's the All-Valley champion, which apparently must be a real... I'm curious if other martial arts tournaments across the nation would go, the All-Valley, what the hell is that? You right? know, like, you want dudes like in New York or like...
He's got a world champion. It's just All-Valley.
Yeah, you want it the Gracies down in Brazil are like, oh yeah, that's impressive. Right? Yeah, okay, sure, all right. Yeah, I don't see Dana White like it's sending anyone a contract. Okay? Yeah, as you can hear my cats having a fit. Okay, so this will be this one we're gonna do as the 3-point victory instead of like a true death match. So again, so you have the two, and again, very similar to the Yoda Miyagi fight, they agree to just want to see. And so I think the first round goes to Daniel. Number one, because he's gonna have more of that youthful aggressiveness. Number two, Miyagi's gonna want to maybe just fill out a student a little bit. So Daniel gets point. I would say Daniel may even get points one and points two. Miyagi then recommits. I can see Kimiko in the crowd telling her this is what he wants. This is how he learns. You must go forward. And then Miyagi then quickly rebounds and gets points. His own points, one and two. So we're tied up 2-2 going to the final one. And then as Daniel goes to do the crane kick, and this is what people wanted. They wanted to see one of them use the crane kick. So Daniel is in full crane kick stance. By the way, as cool as it looks in the movies, in practicality, you're the martial artist. Mm-hmm. In practicality, that doesn't work. It takes a year for it to set up.
The kick works. It's the arm things that you're like, why don't you put your arms down in front of you?
Yeah, that's what my point is. It's like, again, it's like a professional wrestling move. Like, the setup is so telegraphed. You're like,
right. Shawn Michaels, you know,
the sweet chin with the three stomps. Yeah,
right. Like, okay. Three stomps, you know it's coming.
I remember someone actually was watching. Someone remarked on a wrestling match. They go, obviously, we are again respecting. I think it is actually a sport. But anyway, someone from Malaysia, you did take it to the quote unquote real world in quotation marks. Yeah. Like, if you knew before someone gave you like this devastating super kick, they got to stomp like three times. When you hear the stomps, don't get up.
Right.
Like, yeah, I'm just not going to get up or like roll out of the ring. Like, I'm not standing up, you know?
Right. So I think it was a Shawn Michaels Ric Flair.
Yeah, I thought it was a Shawn Michaels Ric Flair fight. Like, the real Ric Flair would just roll out of the ring. Like, yeah, I'm not getting up. What are you talking about? Yeah.
And then he would say, woo.
Yes. I did see someone I saw someone on Facebook had a meme with Ric Flair and Roddy Piper driving in a Jeep Wagoneer like 1979. Yeah. That no matter how cool you think you are, you will never be as cool as this picture. So, and I was like, damn, true. Skippy. Damn, yeah, Skippy. Okay. Yeah. So back to the Miyagi-Daniel-san fight. Daniel-san is a full crane kick stance. Miyagi-san is got kind of, again, on my head, I almost go through the Ric Flair, Shawn Michaels match. Right. Miyagi's telling Daniel, come on, do it. So as Daniel reaches up for the kick, Miyagi pulls out the one technique he never taught Daniel-san. The one technique that only true members, full members of the Miyagi family know. If the crane kick is their ultimate offensive move, this is the ultimate counter. So as Daniel attempts to kick him using the crane kick, Miyagi performs the counter, hits a strike to the middle of Daniel's chest, and wins 3-2. And Miyagi defeats Daniel-san, and the teacher remains better than the student.
All right, there we have it. The world of the Prevenge of the Nerds. Brian S. Dennis has called it Mr. Miyagi, the ultimate fighter.
Yes. Proof that the only way to defeat Mr. Miyagi is to truthfully be a Jedi Master.
Right. A Jedi Grandmaster.
Jedi Grandmaster, exactly.
That's right. That's right. Okay, Brian, what do you have for me?
As always, you know I love doing the tats, my tats being a riddle. So here we go. So now I got my riddle. So I think I'm doing this one because I feel this is one that you'll get. So part of me wants to go, I've got it in three different sections. And so here's what I like to do. And if you get it, so here's what I like. I'm going to read each section. So section one, you take a guess. Section two, you take a guess. Section three, you take a guess. Okay. Even if you're wrong, I will give you one more guess. Because normally what we do is three questions and three guesses. And with this one, as I read each section, you're not allowed a question, but you have to take a guess. If you don't get any of them right, by the time we finish the third question, then you can get your three questions plus one additional guess. Does that make sense?
Okay.
So I'll read section one, you take a guess. If you get it wrong, I'll read section two, take a guess if you get it wrong. Section three, take a guess. If you get it wrong, then I can reread the entire thing as many times as you want to. You then have access to your three questions, and then you get one final fourth guess. Does that work for you? All right.
I like it.
Okay. And again, I think you're going to get it probably no later than section two, but let's see where we're at. Okay. All right. Here we go. I'm related to and have provided inspiration to people named Donald. I'll read it again. I am both related to and have provided inspiration to or provided information, inspiration for people named Donald.
Okay.
Take a guess. Mickey Mouse. Think this is wrong.
Okay.
Red, green, and blue are my favorite colors.
Oh boy. Well, I mean nothing political, but we're gonna say Donald Trump.
Wrong.
Okay.
And third one, this is why I think you'll get it. If it looks like me, walks like me, and talks like me, money is no object.
I mean, that could be Trump as well. Okay. Anyway.
You're kind of right. You're kind of right there. I'm not gonna lie to you.
Oh man!
Take a guess, and then you get your three questions. If you get it wrong,
all right. Give me that part again.
Sure. If it looks like me, walks like me, and talks like me, money is not an object.
Huh? Walks like a duck, talks like a duck. So I'm getting a duck vibe there. Donald Duck. Yeah. All right, I'm going to say Donald Duck.
Wrong. Okay, now, just to revamp what we do, so you get one additional guess. Now, here's what I'm going to do. I'll reread it again, but I can reread it as many times as you want to. Reread it in entirety, and you get your three guesses, okay? So I'm going to read it in entirety, then we can go wherever you want to go. I am related to and have provided inspiration for people named Donald. Red, green, and blue are my favorite colors, and if it looks like me, walks like me, and talks like me, money is not an object.
Oh, it's red, green, and blue, not red, white, and blue. Oh my gosh, I misread. Okay. Okay. Red, green, and blue. Red, green, and blue.
Red, green. You do have your three questions the time you want to ask them.
Is this a fictional character?
Yes.
Okay. Is this an animated character?
Yes.
Okay. Is this a Disney character?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. I read it again.
I am related to and have provided inspiration for people named Donald.
Okay.
Red, green, and blue are my favorite colors. And if it looks like me, walks like me, and talks like me, money is not an object.
Is it Scrooge McDuck?
It is Scrooge McDuck.
Awesome. And the green, I was like, where's the green? I'm like, great. Oh, green money. Money's an object. The money pit. Okay.
It okay. is, but also red, green, and blue are the colors worn colors by Huey, Dewey, and Louie.
Oh, very good. Very good. I dig it a lot.
And the reason that this, yes, and the reason that this came up, because again, one of the many joys of Disney Plus, which honestly I think Paramount Plus might be my favorite streaming service right now, but Disney Plus is right there because of one of my great shows that I loved was DuckTales, and I have been kind of in a DuckTales mood again. Great theme song too. Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, I can't remember.
In a horror video game.
Really?
Oh God. Oh yeah!
Oh
man, buy it at the PlayStation Store. I think you can get it for like $5.
Sure,
and,
sure.
And you, it's hard. You can't. It is unbeatable.
That makes me want to play it all the more.
Oh yeah,
I want to play it all the much more. So yes, but yes, Scrooge McDuck, and obviously you know he's related to Donald Duck. Play with the facts a little bit there, but you can definitely think maybe he was a little inspiration for our former president. Again, right. The red, green, and blue, Huey, Dewey, and Louie. And if he walked like a duck, talked like a duck, and asked like a duck, man, it's no odd. Scrooge McDuck was known for being super rich. And as he swam in his money. By the way, I don't care if he's a duck. Extra points, you know what kind of duck Scrooge McDuck is? They actually discussed this. He is a certain breed of duck. You know the kind of duck he is.
Is he a mallard?
No, he's a Pekin. He's a Pekin duck. A P-E-K-I-N. Pekin, I think they say it.
Pekin
duck. Yeah. Oh,
interesting.
So, yeah.
I like it. Good job, man. So you're really quick. Did you finish a Yellowstone?
Have not finished Yellowstone. Will soon, though.
Okay, 1883. Have you watched 1883 yet?
Yes, yes.
What are your thoughts on 1883?
I really, really enjoy it. I'm still digging Yellowstone more, but really like 1883. You can't go wrong with Sam Elliott. And just for not to go on a big thing on this, but he has shown how to age. First of all, he's that very specific guy, right?
Yeah.
Almost like Clint Eastwood, that grizzled. Yeah. He's Clint Eastwood without some of the crazy. Mm-hmm. But I don't think he's ever had a diatribe with a chair.
Yeah.
An empty chair at that. But anyway, I love that. And it had me in episode one where, you know, there's that heartbreaking scene with the family and him burning down the house, and him sitting there, and because you know they had him in his younger days, he was just kind of a Billy Badass, Roadhouse. He was a perfect mentor to Patrick Swayze. In fact, I would have rather faced Dalton than Sam Elliott's character, and Kelly McGill totally should have went with Sam. RIP both to Swayze though. Then with that Ashton Kutcher vehicle, him being kind of the crotchety old guy,
the ranch,
and now the ranch, and now you've got him just this broken down guy,
cowboy,
who every day life is a struggle. And I love with his friend in the first episode, where basically when Sam think about, and again, spoiler alert a little bit, when Sam think about, you know, blowing his head off, where his friend asks, like, this was, and this is only would have worked with this beaten down, dusty cowboy. Yeah. You know, hey, if I'm gonna have to dig a hole, you know, I'd rather do it before the sun gets too high.
I know.
If you're gonna do it. So right. We could just be done, right? Yes. He didn't want sympathy. He wanted just man to man. If you're gonna do it, you're gonna do it.
Yeah.
And then next thing you know, he's like, all right, let's go. You know, yeah. So I really enjoyed it. So it's, I mean, it's just one of, again, there's so much good. There's so many great things that are streaming right now. I'm honestly not even finished Lock and Key. I got distracted with so many other great things. Oh. I got to go back and finish Lock and Key. So yep. I'm like, oh, no, I got like three episodes of Lock and Key left to watch. So just so much great stuff. So much good. Great stuff out there.
Good. Yeah, I'm with you too. All right, well, let's go ahead and close everything up. So thanks for catching up. You're welcome for leveling up your awesomeness. Live free or die empty, friends. Have a great day.